Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Tzadik Dalet. So let's get back into this exciting sugya. And the truth is, what we're really trying to do is to get to the bottom of the interrelationship, as we mentioned yesterday, the interrelationship of two very important factors, which is the initial Mishnah that allows us to be semech on the Eid Echad, that a Bezdin can be semech on an Eid Echad. We looked at this from various points of view. So first of all, remember that the entire development is only because we were looking for a way out of igun. We didn't want women to be put into a position where they would never be able to get married again because of doubts as to what happened to their husbands. So because of that, we allowed the Eid Echad. But we can't just allow for an Eid Echad. So what we did is we made these takanas of 16 implications, or I should say consequences, of relying on an Eid Echad, even in terms of Beit Din. And because of that, we assumed that a woman will be very careful about what it is that she does, because she'll do her own investigations for fear of losing out in this catastrophic way of her future. So, and then yesterday, we introduced some new factors that need to be taken into consideration. And that would be emotional factors, which in similar cases where someone would face such consequences, that nonetheless we would have to take into consideration her being in love with someone else or her hating her Yavama. And we had originally used the Mishnah that we're now involved in, which has to do with believing an aid in terms of Yibum, as a way to parse the issues of the opening Mishnah, of the interrelationship between the Ne'amonis of an Eid Echad, which, remember, according to the Rambam, is actually a D'oraisa, because we only need two Eidim where something is not able to be Huvrar, outside of the Eidut. That was his approach. That means we had two different issues. We had the Eid Echad in a case where the Eid knows that he can be shown up by the facts, the Baal may show up, and also the investigative powers of the woman. So when we introduced those two new factors of hatred or love, that made it a little more difficult for us to understand the second Mishnah, because was the second Mishnah about saying to a woman that she could get Yibum or saying to a woman that she doesn't need Yibum? That was with the questions of did her husband die before her child, did her child die before the husband? So the question was whether the Mishnah is referring to a case of Eid Echad, or there never was a takana believing Eid Echad in those cases because of the complicating factors of love or hate, and that therefore it required two Eidim. And when the Mishnah said, the second Mishnah said, Amrula, Amrula meant with two Eidim. So that's what we were examining yesterday. Now, Reb Sheshis tried to bring a proof from the fact that if we believe the second two, the second two Eidim that contradict the first Eid, that we go according to the second Eidim, it must be talking about an Eid Echad, because if it was Trey and Trey, why would we believe the second ones? Why not say that at least it's a Suffolk and it'd be Suffolk Mamzer, and why should we not Mamzer Vadai, and so on, right? And so we answered that yesterday, and we said, you cannot prove anything from the Mishnah, because the Mishnah could be talking about Trey or Trey, but the second two Eidim did not argue with the first Eidim. They said, we don't know anything about the case, but we do know that you don't know anything about the case, because imanu hayitem. So in other words, it was a case of hazama. It was not a case of akasha. And of course, in cases of hazama, as we know, the Torah gave us a chiddush that we always go according to the Eidim that are the mazimim. All right. That's where we got up to yesterday. Today we'd like to see if we can bring any further proof about how to understand our mission. In the case of her being told that her husband died and she needs Yibum or doesn't need Yibum, what is the din? Do we believe in Eid Echad in that case, or is an Eid Echad completely irrelevant to the case? Amalei Rav Mordechai L'Rav Hashi. So today we're up to, on Tzadik Dalet Amud Aleph, we're up to the second Raya, and which was Amalei Rav Mordechai L'Rav Hashi, and that would be about a third of the way down. So Amalei Rav Mordechai L'Rav Hashi, or some say it was Rav Acha L'Rav Hashi. Well, I think I could bring you a Raya, and it's without needing to come on to all of these cases, and we don't need to get into what you got into. I'll say very simply, take a look at the Mishnah that we have later on, which says, Ein ha'isha ne'emenet lomar meit yevam isha enaseh. A woman herself cannot be believed if she comes along to say, well, I was going to get Yibum, and that's why I never married anybody else, as you may recall, but then I just got a message that the Yavam died, and there were two Adim or whatever. She's quoting what, however she knows. Maybe she knows personally he was in a car accident. We will not believe her. And she is also not believed, and we'll see later on why we're going to have this dinim, even though she is believed to say that her husband died. For some reason, she's not believed to say that her Yavam died, and she's not believed to say that her sister died. Why would she want her sister to be dead? Because she wants to marry the husband of her sister. So if her sister were alive, let's say they had gotten divorced 20 years ago, right? She always wanted to marry this guy. Now she, her ex-brother-in-law, the fact that it's an ex-brother-in-law because they got divorced doesn't change anything, because remember that the sister of a wife is asura unless the wife died. But a divorce doesn't change anything. That's going to turn out to be a very important issue as we go along here to differentiate between the Mishnah and this case, as we'll see, the first Mishnah and this case. But she is not believed to say, my sister died and now I want to marry her husband. Which, if the Mishnah has to say that, and it's saying she herself is not believed, does that not imply that anything that's objective would be believed? It's only she who's not believed. So in other words, let's say that an Eid Echad came along, then the Eid Echad would be Neman, because Han'ihi lo me'emna. I understand that the Mishnah is saying her own testimony doesn't prove anything. But if we had any other testimony, even if it would be an Eid Echad, it would be enough. Says the Gemara, excuse me. I mean, that is obviously not a proper diuk from the Mishnah. Because if you think that the Mishnah is not simply coming to address the question of her ne'emanus without any implications about the aid, then how do you look at the sefer of the Mishnah, okay? That Mishnah, the very same Mishnah you just quoted, continues on to say that a man is not believed to say, my brother died, and therefore I am going to marry his wife with Yibum. We don't have any objective proof that his brother died. And he's also not believed to say, my wife died, and therefore I can now marry her sister, which, according to you, should be implying that, same words you just used, yes, he's not believed himself, but if we had any kind of objective indication that that were the case, then it would be believed, namely an Eid Echad. If an Eid Echad says that his wife died, he can go and marry the sister. Is that reasonable? No, because remember, when it comes to the woman, the only reason that we introduced this entire sugya, it all started with Iguna. The Rabbanim were looking for a way out of the problem of a woman not being able to marry. Fine. That makes sense when it's relevant to a woman. Over here, you're telling me it's relevant to a man? And you're going to tell me that we believe in Eid Echad to allow a man to marry a particular woman? His ex, according to his words, his ex-sister-in-law? What's the problem? Why in the world should we believe in Eid Echad in that case? It's ridiculous. If the only reason that we were metaken to believe in Eid Echad was to save a woman from an awful state of Igun, there's no such equivalence in a man. What's the big deal? So we'll believe him. Your wife died, so he can marry whoever he wants. He's allowed to have two wives. So why should we be mater? Well, he's got a bedavka marry his sister-in-law. It's in his sarkaris. It's ridiculous. Of course we won't believe in Eid Echad. So obviously, the Mishnah couldn't possibly be coming to tell me the implications. Well, he's not believed, but an Eid Echad is believed. That's absurd. That's not the point. The point is, therefore, to say the din itself, not the implication. In other words, we need to know that a woman is not believed to say that her Yavam died. So why do we need the Mishnah to say that? Why should she be believed to say that her Yavam died? You see, I'll tell you why. Suppose if she goes ahead and gets married to somebody else on the basis of our believing her that the Yavam died. And then the Yavam comes along and shows up. Okay? What would be the din? Well, according to Rabbi Akiva, who holds, remember that the Rabbi Akiva, it's a Kasalka Daitachamin, according to Rabbi Akiva, Yesh Mamzer Michai Velavim. So, there is a din of Mamzerut. So, I would therefore assume, Ema Chaisha Al Kilkula. Now, that Mamzer Michai Velavim, according to this, would mean that basically the entire marriage to somebody else of a Yavama Lashuk, we're saying that we should go ahead and believe her because of the fact that she says that her Yavam died, that she can marry somebody else. So is she believed to say that her husband died? Yes. So why is she believed? Because she's going to suffer all of those crazy consequences. And therefore, we believed her as well directly if she knows that her husband died. Okay. So I might have thought that according to Rabbi Akiva, a Yavama Lashuk is the full equivalent of the din of the woman who marries somebody else and her husband shows up. Because since according to Rabbi Akiva, Kiddushin is not chal, and it creates mamzerim. So all of the issues, the truth is, there's two girsa'ot here, but we're taking the girsa that Rashi prefers. That namely, all of the issues that would have affected the woman who claimed that her husband was dead, and then she gets married, and then he shows up, would affect the case of the Yavam, her claim that the Yavam is dead. It's exactly the same, according to Rabbi Akiva. Because an Isser Lav is the full equivalent of an Isser Kar, so therefore everything else would follow. She loses everything, she's totally messed up, her children are Mamzerim, etc., right? So you would have thought, okay, so if we believe her to say that her husband is dead, why would we not believe her to say that the Yavam is dead? Because she's going to face exactly the same consequences that allowed us to believe her when it came to the husband. So therefore, I would say, Ho'ilvam Rabbi Akiva Yesh Mamzer Ach B'chai V'lavim. Now, this is the Bach Girsa, and it follows Rashi's preferred pshat. Eimach Aisha Halkilkula V'daika. So I would say a woman is going to be very nervous about ruining her life, and therefore, again, we can rely on her investigation. And therefore, I need the Mishnah to say, no, we will not trust her. Not because we would trust an aide. We wouldn't trust an aide either. But we need to know that we don't trust her. Kamash Malan, take out the words of Kukula Didabik, again from the Bach. Kamash Malan, that she is not believed. Why is she not believed? This is that new issue that we raised yesterday. She's not believed, even though you would say it's a completely parallel case to the opening Mishnah of believing that her husband was dead. It is not. Why? Because, Alon, you're falling asleep. Because she might hate the Yavam. And if she hates the Yavam, then she's more likely to take this out and say the Yavam is dead based on insufficient circumstantial evidence. And therefore, we cannot believe her because she is desperate not to be stuck with this idiot. Rava. Okay, so that's the end of that. So now we've got two rayas that we dumped. We still don't know. Is the pshat in our Mishnah that an Eid Echad told her that the Yavam, or these cases, her husband died and then the child, all the cases, or is it referring to two Eidim? Like it says, Omrula. We don't know yet. Rava says, well, I can answer the issue without looking at the Mishnah. I say, look, just think about it logically, okay? For sure, an Eid Echad would be believed when it comes to Yavama. Because if you're going to allow a woman to get married on the basis of an Eid Echad, where you're talking about an Isser Kares, so then Kol Shekein, if you want to believe her that she should be able to get married based on an Eid Echad, an Isser Lav, so for sure we should believe her, no? I mean, it's much less chomer, and you're willing to even allow an Eishes Ish? So Kol Shekein, a Yavam Lashuk, which is only an Isser Lav, for sure, you should allow. So therefore, your answer simply is logical, isn't it? That's how Rashi understands the whole issue. So Tosfos does not like this pshat. So the Tosfos says, because there's an obvious reason why we don't like this pshat. The whole reason that we wanted to distinguish between the two cases of the Eishes Ish and the Yavam was because we have these additional emotional issues by the case of the Yavama that we did not have by the case of the husband. I mean, there's no chashash that she is going to be in the matzav of being stuck with the husband the way she was with the Yavama. Why should we think such a thing? Okay, so therefore, so the pshat in the Tosfos would be that we'd have to make our kal v'chomer from a case where at least one of these factors was present. So therefore, according to Tosfos, what Rava is saying is like this, that since an eid echad is believed to say that her husband died and she can get yibum, and we don't say in that case that we would be chayshus, that maybe she's in love with the yavam, and nonetheless we allow that there is the proper diuk. So then if that's the case, then we're not going to say that she's not dayak because she hates her yavam, where it's only an iser lav of yavam l'shuk. Now that makes more sense. That's how Tosfos understands it. But the basic approach of Rav, we don't need a Mishnah. We need only to look at the cases that we have until this point. And therefore, we could just figure it out mitzad hasvara. Okay, so this is our third approach as to what the pshat is. However, Omar le'ahumi rabbanon l'rava, this also doesn't stand up to looking at closely, because as one of the Talmidim said to Rava, on the contrary, he atzma tochiach, the din of the woman herself and her believability without the eid echad proves that your kal v'chomer is simply not true. Because we know that if she comes along and she says, my husband died, we are matir her. So that means that a woman who said, my husband died, even though they're going to be a chi of chorus, if it turns out that her husband didn't die. So according to you, you should say so. Kol shekein, if a woman says that my yavam died, she's believed, right? But we just learned beferish that if a woman says that yavam died, she is not believed. Why? Because she hates him, possibly, which is very normal. And she does not want to be stuck with him. So if that's good enough to differentiate the two cases when it comes to her own nemanus, why would it not be good enough to differentiate the cases in terms of your kal v'chomer to believe in eid echad? Therefore, goodbye, kal v'chomer. Because according to you, it should for sure be believed for the yavam, and yet the opposite is true. Le'isser karet, you were believing her, and le'isser lav, you did not believe her. So obviously this kal v'chomer is simply not true. And that's because we have our issue, which is, Ela'ihi my time alomehem. Now, why don't we believe her in the case of the Yibum? As we've said all along, hate. Hate being an extremely powerful motivation to not be medayik. Because the given the zin in the sanyale, lo daiko mitzvah, she's grabbing whatever excuse she can to get away from this guy. So if she hears something or other, she's going, oh, yeah, for sure, he's dead, thank God, and so on, right? So then eid echad nami. That would be true about the eid echad, because we were only relying on the eid echad in a case where we could trust her investigation. But since we see that when it comes to herself, we don't believe her investigation, so the same thing is true over there. Maybe she hates the guy, given the zimna desanyalite. So she'll say, oh, yeah, we should definitely trust the eid echad, and she persuades herself that the husband is dead, and therefore lo daika minseva. So again, we have no final shot in understanding the Mishnah, which is fascinating, and therefore even lahalacha, we end up having a machlokas, how we come out on this. So according to the Rambam, because of the fact that everybody was trying to bring a raya, that the eid echad is Naaman, that's the halacha, even though we don't have an absolute proof. But Lamaisa, when it comes to the psak, as the Tur brings, his father, the Rush, said that that's not true. And he held that she's not, an eid echad is not Naaman. Okay, so obviously this ends up being machlokas between the Sfaradim and the Ashkenazim, the Shulchan Aruch and the Rama, who says that we should, the Rama, of course, says we should be machmer. Okay. Anyway, let's get to the end of the Mishnah. So now we've dealt with the beginning of the Mishnah. We've not been able to secure an absolute proof one way or the other. We end up actually not being sure, and we have this machlokas aposkim. Now, let's talk about the closing of the Mishnah. And since we've been talking about oysters and pearls and nice big pieces of rock that have to be lifted, we might as well maintain the metaphor, which is amazing because it has absolutely nothing to do with the original approach. That is wild. So anyway, so Rebbe Elazar ben Matya ended up saying, well, this is not even a Reach HaGet, and therefore if she gets a get, that it's ridiculous, because after all, it says that a Kohen is Osir Isha Grusha Me Isha, a woman divorced from her husband. Now, what do you think? Well, obviously, she divorced from her husband. I mean, who else could she be divorced from? Chiluk Bilek. I mean, what is that supposed to mean? Therefore, I come up with a brilliant explanation, which is that it's only when her husband is completely really her husband, not when he just looks like a husband. So, okay, so that means that Gufa, the Pasuk, is teaching you, don't be worried about a Reach HaGet where no marriage can exist, right? So Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, you know, I mean, this is sad. Let me tell you something. Rabbi Elazar ben Matya had this beautiful Pasuk. And it had such a beautiful, I mean, talking about oysters, you could have gotten a margalit out of this pasuk, and instead, he wasted it on this, like, completely ridiculous diak that he makes over here, as if somebody doesn't know that, yeah, she has to be divorced from her husband. I don't know what he's talking about. He should have gotten a pearl out of this, and instead, all he got was the rock that was covering the oyster. I mean, how do you do that? The Darsh Bechaspa, I'll tell you. What the pearl over here? Pearl. Let me talk about a beautiful deer. Isha grusha me isha, with a mapiket, right? A woman who is divorced from her husband. What an insane way to talk about a divorce, but it's not. Because suppose a husband divorced a woman, but added the clause that, but that doesn't mean you can marry anybody else. So he's telling her, you are Grusha from me, and we are separated. That's it. But I'm not giving you a divorce to go marry anybody else. I mean, I still want to get my $100,000 out of you so that you, and whatever, right? But we can understand the case. Comes along the pasuk to say that even if she was only Grusha Me'isha, that is considered to be usher for a Kohen, because that's called Reach HaGet. Aha. So the beautiful Marganita would have been Afilu lo nitgarsha ela miisha. She got married only from her own husband. She becomes posel kahuna, which would be the concept of it smells like a get to me, and therefore she would be posel kahuna. So we call this the smell of a get. Okay, so now there's a big, I mean, the pashtus is that what he's trying to say, if it's Marganita, that it really is this new idea that the Dioris is saying that there exists the concept of a Reach HaGet, which actually brings about a separation between a man and a woman without being mater her li'olam. And therefore, there are those who taina that this is actually a Dioris, many of the poskim, and that this Reach HaGet is what the Pasuk was really coming to say, because he's saying that was the drusha of a Marganita. However, the Rambam explains that, of course, this is, where would we get a new concept of a get that's not mater a woman based on this, that there's a semi-get? Obviously, this is a drabbanan, and the Pasuk is a remez b'alma, and the Rambam speaks this out at great length, where he talks about it in the Ilchos Gerushin, where he gives over the list of the usages, the word usages, because sometimes we say a get is batel, sometimes we say a get is ain a get, and so on, and different lishonas. So he says, he clarifies over there, look, let me just tell you how to understand the words in this book, okay, meaning his own book, Mishneh Torah. Koma kom shamarnu b'chibur zesha get batel, o ain o get, o ain a megureshet. That means that this is a get batel min haTorah, and she remains an eshet ish gemura with all of the consequences. If she got married to somebody else, the vlad is mamzer, and so on and so forth. If her husband is a kohen, she's not considered to be divorced at all. There's only one case that is different. That's where chutz min haMegareshet ishto v'omer la hareat megureshet mimeni, but einat muteret l'chol adam, which is, of course, this case of Reach HaGet. And there, Afal Pisha Ein Ze Get, but Midrabanan Harezu Psula Lekoin Midivreyem, Shenemar V'Isha Grusha Mi'Isha, Omru Chachamim Afilo Lo Nidgarsha Ela Mi'Isha. But of course, this is called Zeu Reach HaGet Sheposel Bekuna Midivreyem. It's all a Midrabanan, which is consistent, of course, with the Rambam's entire approach. Okay, so this, again, another Machlokas HaPoskim, is the concept of Reach HaGet a Derabbanan, a Chumra by Kahuna, or is there really a din in Gittin of Reach HaGet? This is not our sugya, we're doing Yibum over here, but remember, when we get to Gittin, that we'll have to get into this more deeply. What is that kind of get? And now, we are ready for a very important moment.
Get
to get. Go for it. Oh, fascinating that we now have a perfect example of the non-symmetry in bad boys and bad girls. And this is what the Gemara is interested in, is to actually bring this out. How come when a man does something wrong, he doesn't suffer any of these consequences, but when a woman does something wrong, she does suffer all of these consequences? We're going to get into this question now in a parallel Mishnah, which is, instead of a woman whose man went overseas, we have a man whose woman went overseas. So what would be the din if they came back and they told the man, that your wife who went overseas, died. So, they come and they tell him, Meta Ishtacha. So he goes and marries his wife's sister. Now, that's a big no-no unless his wife died. So that would be the only, now, note, of course, that we're continuing on with the strange interconnections between the din of Yibum in marrying the wife of a brother and Achot Isha, marrying the wife of the sister of a wife. Note, remember, from the beginning of the Masechet, that was where Aleha was found, right? In that sugya, and that's where we learned the din of Litzrar, that there's a din of Tzara, and we pointed out that those are two mirror images, so that the wife of a brother and the sister of a wife, those are mirror images, and the fact is that they are the only places where, upon death, Isser Erva becomes Mutter. Exactly. So that would be why the Torah is actually juxtaposing those dinim. And we saw many times that the Masechet would get into that connection. We're doing it again. So now we're talking about marrying the Achot Ishto. And that is now a mirror to the case that we had where they told the woman that she can marry. And she was marrying the brother was the Yavam. And then she was Eshet Achiv. So what is the din in this opposite case? So they went and told him, your wife died. He goes ahead, marries the sister, and guess who comes back right there at the Sheva Brochas? Yes, indeedy. His wife walks in. In that case, he's allowed to remarry her, to take her. He doesn't have to remarry her. She's his wife. And she can go back to him because why not? There never was a marriage to the sister that would answer her, right? So as far as the second marriage was concerned, his marriage to her sister, that's garbage. He was never married to her. And therefore, he is allowed to marry any of her relatives. He can marry the sisters. I mean, it's as if he's once married to her. He can marry his daughter and so on. And not only that, the sister is allowed to marry any of his relatives who otherwise would have been usher. So his son can marry her. We don't say, well, isn't that considered to be Eshet Aviv? No, they were never married at all. The whole thing was just pure znus. He went ahead and married his wife's sister, even though his wife was alive. Now, obviously, this is not a parallel to the first Mishnah, where there are severe consequences to going ahead and marrying an Erva. And over here, there's no consequences. There's no get. There's no nothing. There's no issue of further Isurim or losing out on his wife and so on. Now, How about the other case? Okay. Let's say they said to him, your wife died. He marries the sister. Now, this is a parallel to the mission we had earlier in the inverse case. He marries the sister. And then two witnesses come along. They tell him, actually, your wife was alive when you first married the sister. And then she died. And she's currently dead. So then the first child, who was actually the hirayon, so talking about the conception, was while the wife turned out to have been alive, is obviously a mamzer. The second one, meaning after she had already died, so then he impregnates her, and then that's not a mamzer. So the second one is not a mamzer. Rabbi Yossi says, well, it's not so simple. And that is that kol sheposel al yedei acherim, posel al yedei atzmo. Anybody who's messing up somebody else ends up messing up himself. Kol she'eno posel al yedei acherim, eno posel al yedei atzmo. Now, the question is over here. Did this disaster of his marrying this woman, did it cause her to be usher? So until now, we've been talking about the case as if his sister-in-law that he married was herself unmarried. Suppose the sister was married. And suppose his wife, this first guy's wife, had gone overseas together with his brother-in-law. And suppose they then come back and they say, oh, the ship capsized, both of them died. In reality, neither of them died. Meanwhile, they marry each other. Now, here things get interesting, because then when both of them show up, the Sheva Brachas, so now the sister is actually Asura on her husband, right? Because now she's the one that is the equivalent of the first. Now we have both cases in one. So we have the first Mishnah and this Mishnah. So Rabbi Yossi says, in a case where the consequences are that the one that he slept with, namely his wife's sister, ends up becoming Asura to her husband, then he becomes Pasul as well to his wife. And we'll see the logic in this later on. But you can't simply say that all cases are the same. Okay, so now let's talk about the opening of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah made no distinction at all whether his wife had gone alone overseas or his wife had gone with his brother-in-law overseas. The very man who's married to the very sister that he always wanted to marry. Okay, so now, the mashmaut of the Mishnah is that afagav da azu ishto v'giso l'medinat hayam. So then what we're saying is, even if his wife went together with his brother-in-law, was married to this woman that he married in the end, and then when he hears that both of them went down with the ship, he marries the sister of his wife, and then the two of them show up, right? So in that case, ahani hani nisuin de komitasra eshet kiso agiso. We are going to look at that illicit marriage to the sister. In one way, we're going to take it very seriously. In what way? It assured her to her own husband, because now his brother-in-law is not allowed to be with that woman because she's the one in the first Mishnah who got married on the basis of her husband being lost. And even so, afilu achi, eshet giso asira, but ishto is sharia. So again, according to the Tanakhama, the sister is going to be usher on her husband, but he is going to be able to take his wife back. And we don't say, well, I mean, look, mitokshin esra ishet giso agiso, teaser ishto alav. I mean, doesn't it make sense that we should actually have parallels, and that if this is considered to be a marriage to aser the woman on her husband, then it should be considered a marriage to aser his own wife on him, because he was married to her sister. And now this is going to be a case of achot ishto, meaning his original wife is now the achot. So the question here also takes into consideration the issue of does she need a get from him? So remember, in the normal case of a woman who actually marries somebody else, and then her husband comes back, she does need a get from the guy that she had supposedly married, but illicitly, right? Now, the reason that we said she needs a get is because people might assume that he had originally divorced and that the woman was married to the second guy legally, and therefore, when she goes out, if she doesn't get a get, then people will say that a get is basically not necessary in certain cases for a married woman, because they won't realize that the reason that they were married was completely illicit. Now, does that apply over here? No, because in this case, even if, what are they going to say? Oh, he must have divorced her, and that's why he's married to the sister? No, because it won't help to divorce a wife to be married to the sister. It's only in a case where a wife dies that he can marry the sister, not if he divorced her. So the whole logic will not apply here to require a get, correct? Because nobody's going to make any kind of errors. They're obviously going to say, how the heck was he sleeping with her sister? He must have thought she died, and now she's back. So, of course, she doesn't need a get. Everybody is going to understand that. And therefore, in this particular case, this is the way Tosus understands it. In this particular case, even though there's all of these 16 consequences, but it's not the business of requiring a get, because why should you need a get? Nobody's going to make this mistake. Therefore, it doesn't look like when he goes back to his wife, she does not look like achot grushato, because he never gave a get. So there should be no problem in his retaking his original wife. Well, why not? If everybody sees it as an error, so it's an error. But this is a very fascinating extension of this logic, because suppose the two of them who had gone off together don't come back at the same time. The ship did go down. They were separated. One of them was on Treasure Island, and the other one was captured by natives and put in a pot and saved by Dr. Midos at the last moment. But whatever. So they had no idea what happened to each other, right? So then suppose the geese, the brother-in-law, comes back first. So then this wife is going to be usher when she comes back. But even when the brother-in-law, who was once married to her, comes back, they might think that in that case, the marriage was a good marriage. Because if the woman isn't there, his wife isn't there, then people will assume, well, must be the brother-in-law divorced her. His wife died. She never showed up yet. And therefore, at that point, we would require a get. So if we required a get and then his wife comes back, so then she would look like achot grushato, right? So that means that the Mishnah would only be talking about a case where the two of them were drowned, the ship sunk, and they both made it together to Treasure Island, and then they were rescued together and came back together. Then there's no get. Okay, so this is really a very complex kind of situation where you have to analyze each one of the circumstances separately, of course. Now, the question is, this doesn't work according to Rabbi Akiva. I'll tell you why not. Lema matnitin de loka Rabbi Akiva. Because, look, we've been doing this throughout the Masechet, trying to figure out if we can shoehorn any of these Mishnayos that seem to be against Rabbi Akiva. Let's see if we can make it work out. I'll leave it to Rabbi Akiva. We just went through that in the Machlokas of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, right? About whether Adam is makna dover shaloba aliola. So I'll tell you why I don't think it can work out like Rabbi Akiva, because Abraita says, if a guy goes out and he marries any of the Arayot, then obviously Kedushin is not Chal. And then, since everybody understands that there was no marriage, he does not, he finds out that this person is really his daughter and he never knew it. So then he does not give a get. Ain't Zichotem and a get. But there's only one case where you do need a get. And that would be the case of an Eshet Ish, Sheni Seita Pi Beitin, which of course was our opening Mishnah, first shot across the bow of this parak, right? Over there you do need a get. That's the only case. Rabbi Akiva says, well, there's actually another case. And that case would be two cases. And guess what the two cases are? Well, the two cases, of course, are the very two cases that we've been talking about. The marriage to a wife's sister and the marriage to a brother's wife. Exactly the two cases that the whole Masechta is based on, right? So Rabbi Akiva says those two cases are different. Where over there, if somebody marries his brother's wife, or if somebody marries the sister of his wife, they do need a get, even though, so this again is talking about the case that we just had. How does somebody marry his brother's wife? The guy heard that his brother died and he went ahead and he did Yibum, and later on it turned out that his brother was alive. Exactly this case that we had in the previous Mishnah. So Rabbi Akiva is saying that even though there wasn't any real Yibum, you do need a get. And, I mean, that's what he seems to be saying. I don't know why you would need a get. I mean, what kind of mistake would people make? Rashi says, well, we don't know why at this point, but we're taking this at face value. That's what he says. That's what he says. I don't know why. And the other case where you marry the sister of your wife is this Mishnah. A guy marries his wife's sister, and then his wife shows up from overseas. Rabbi Akiva says, you do need a get. So if that's the case, then the Mishnah doesn't add up, because if you do need a get, how can he take his wife back when she shows up? She now looks like the wife of his grusha, because we demanded, according to Rabbi Akiva, a get from her, correct? And therefore, the Mishnah can't be going like Rabbi Akiva, because the Mishnah says he can simply stick with his wife, and there's no consequences at having been sleeping with her sister this whole time under the mistaken assumption that she was dead. So, no Rabbi Akiva. Says the Gemara, no, please. I mean, remember, we had to understand Rabbi Akiva because it didn't make any sense. I mean, what mistake could people possibly make to think that you would need a get in a case where the marriage was an Isser Kares? So what was explained over there, that Rav Gidol Amar Rav Chiya Bar Yosef Amar Rav, that what Rabbi Akiva was talking about when he said a case of an Eshet Ach, you know what that was talking about? It was talking about where there were grounds for people to think you need a get. Not the normal case. The case was that his brother had only given kedushin to this woman, and then he left. And at that point, he hears that his brother died, and he went ahead and he took his brother's wife, Yibum. So, but since there was only kedushin in that case, which is Mechayev Yibum, but now we're going to need a get, says Rabbi Akiva. Why? Because people, remember we had this logic before. If you only made kedushin, then people can still excuse the fact that you were sleeping with someone that's usher, because they would think that there was a t'nai in the kedushin, and the t'nai was never mekuyam. Say he said, I'm marrying you on condition that I'm a kohen. He wasn't a kohen. Or whatever. So then people will say, well, I mean, look, obviously, if the guy was with his wife, there must have been a mistake in the kedushin. How come there's no get? I guess you don't need a get for a second wife, whatever. I don't know what they figure. So in that case, Rabbi Akiva said, okay, there, you do need a get. Fine. Okay. This is not so pushit, but I don't want to confuse you. But remember that we only said that logic where someone had done an Isser. So we have to analyze the case. We don't say always that people make that ridiculous mistake. We were using that logic in order to create the problem that will allow the woman not to have Igun. So this whole discussion seems to be mitalem from that, and Tosis explains it. But anyway, so that would be the case where it was a Kedusha. And then, Omar v'nasat ishto, because their people would say, Damrin shiach kama t'noa havele b'kedushin. There must have been some kind of t'nai in the kedushin, and when he married her, he was marrying her, actually, lahalacha, because she'd never been married to his brother. So v'hai shaper nasiv. So when they see that he goes out and doesn't give her a get, so they'll think you don't need a get. Therefore, Rabbi Akiva said, you have to give a get, but otherwise it's absurd. And I'll tell you what the reason is that Rabbi Akiva said that somebody who marries his wife's sister needs a get, even though that doesn't make any sense either. I'll tell you, it's a special case. The case was that a guy marries a woman, but only with kedushin. And then she goes on this trip overseas, right? He hears that she died. He goes and marries the sister. Our case, except the difference is that they never actually consummated the marriage and they never went to the chuppah. It was only a kedusha. So over here too, people will say, so maybe this was a normal marriage, not based on any kind of mistake. And therefore they really were married. And there she goes without a get. How do you explain that? So because of that, Rabbi Akiva says, okay, so in a chinami, you do have to give her a get. Okay. So then this is according to the Gemara, now not a raya. That it's not like Rabbi Akiva, because that's not the case of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is talking about where they were married, and he were talking about where there was only Kiddushin. Okay. Fine. Now, there is some question over here, as I said to you. Is this, as the Gemara said earlier, we're only going to knock this into place that you need to get when somebody did an Isser, right? Okay, but in the case where she did not do any Isser, because she was not married. Remember, we said that there could be two cases over here. One case could be where she was married, and then she becomes a surah to her husband, and then she did an Isser. So, okay, I can understand why there would be a get in that case. But what about in a case where she was a pnuya? So she didn't do any Isser, as far as her husband was concerned, in doing this. And therefore, over here, she wasn't relying on anything. And therefore, over here, it would actually, Lechora, we would not say that you need a get in this case. So as Tosis points out, just because we're worried that people will say she's Yotzi without a get makes absolutely no difference, because we saw before, it's only where you did an Isser. So that means that what we're talking about over here, when we said she went overseas together with Giso, with the brother-in-law, that's what we're talking about over here. And that defines the entire discussion from that point onwards, you see. So the introductory words in the Gemara are necessary for us to understand why it's not going a little bit of Rabbi Akiva. It wasn't two separate discussions. That's what Tosafos understands. Okay. Anyway, but here in our Mishnah, where the case was Ishto, does not say Huvarusato. It talks about Ishto. Ishto means that she was a normal wife. They had been married maybe for years, but they had definitely gone to the chuppah. So over there, nobody would say that there was a tnai on nisuin, because the general halacha is that even if an individual would make such a tnai, and he says, listen, I'm only marrying you because you're going to give me $200,000, right? And then he takes her to the chuppah. What we say is that once he took her to the chuppah, then he was mevater on the tnai, unless he specifically makes it again. But normally we say all tnaim are off once he goes to the chuppah for two reasons. First of all, we have a general rule. Please make a flashcard for this, Moshe Foreman. We have a general rule that ein adam oseh bi'ilato bi'ilat znut. He's not going to take a chance that, oh my God, people, and well, this looks terrible. He's been shacking up with this girl, then they walk out and then no more marriage after 2 months when it took. No. So people don't do that kind of thing. And then there's another concept for a card, which is called chibat bi'a. And that is the very fact that you have had sexual relations with someone makes them special to you. And that's a chavivut. And that chavivut is more important in his mind than the conditions. So in these cases, there is no way that people are going to think there was a tnai, even in the nisui. Okay, so therefore, even Rabbi Akiva would be perfectly good in our Mishnah, because our Mishnah was not talking about needing a get. Our Mishnah was talking about when they were married. So why would you need a get? Even if he had divorced his wife, there's still nobody's going to say, oh, he must have divorced his wife, and therefore he went and married his sister. You can't marry his sister in the case of a divorce, so they'll understand that it was a mistake. So therefore, the Mishnah can definitely be going Aliba to Rabbi Akiva, and there's no problem. Says Rav Ashi to Rav Kana, well, maybe there's no problem in this din of Rabbi Akiva, namely that you need a get, and therefore it looks like they were married if you need a get, and so if he takes his original wife back, then it looks like he's marrying his wife's sister. You're right. However, it still can't be Rabbi Akiva. You know why? Because it contradicts another din that Rabbi Akiva said, which you didn't take into consideration. Now, let me point this out. According to Rabbi Akiva, why would it say that in the event that he married his mother-in-law, so in that case, you also would need a get. It doesn't say that, right? It should just bring in the case of marrying a mother-in-law. It only talks about marrying a sister-in-law. Well, what would be then if he had married his mother-in-law? Because Rabbi Akiva holds that a woman who dies takes off the iser not only of her sister, but also of her mother. So therefore, if he went and married his mother-in-law, it should have listed that together with the sister, and then we would have had this entire discussion. But the Mishnah, for some reason, only discusses marriage with a sister. You see? Therefore, it must be that the halacha is that we're going here only like the Rabbanan. Because Hashemina l'Rabbi Akiva, the Amar Chamotol Yachar Mita Lav V'Sreifa, there's no chiyav of Sreifa for a guy who sleeps with his mother-in-law after his wife died. And therefore, we're assuming that that means that there would be no Isser either. Now, that's not necessarily true, as we're going to see. But right now, we're assuming that the Torah actually was memayit the entire idea of a mother-in-law if there is no wife. And we have a beautiful, beautiful pasuk that explains what the mokar of that would be, a fantastic pasuk. Because the pasuk says the craziest thing. It says in a case where Isha sheyikach et isha ve'et ima zimahi be'esh yisrafu oto ve'et hen. What in the world does that pasuk mean? A man is who takes a woman and her mother, burn them both. That's crazy. A guy's married to his wife, and then he goes and sleeps with his mother-in-law. We should take the woman and we should burn her because her rotten husband went ahead and made out with her mother. That's crazy. What is that supposed to mean? So something is wrong with this pasuk. I mean, it can't mean what it's saying. So why does it say to burn them because they're Zima? This doesn't make any sense. So what does it mean? So Rabbi Shmuel says, well, the word ve'et hen is actually based on the Greek hen of unos. And therefore it means ve'et hen and one of them. Which one? Whichever one was last. In other words, I can't save ota because there is no specific ota. So what I do is I take a word that means and one of them, which is to be decided by the circumstances. Which one was the wife and which one did he make out with after being married? So if he first married the mother and then he makes out with the daughter, then the daughter is the one that's besreifa. If it's the other way around, then the mother is the one. That's why we say eten. Very simple explanation, says Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Akiva says, no. It means both of them. Now, obviously, he doesn't mean to burn this aniyazo, as the Rishon put. This poor girl whose husband went around sleeping, we're going to burn her. Obviously, that's nuts. So it can't mean that. Okay. So what it does mean is actually a machlokas. So according to Abaye, Abaye says, let me explain to you what the machlokas here between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva is. It has no practical implications. It's simply a matter of the language. It's the mashma'ut dorshin ikabinayu. And basically, we just want to know how to understand the pasuk. And that is that Rabbi Shmuel holds that only one of them is mentioned in this pasuk. Fine. Who is the one? Obviously, the mother-in-law. In other words, if he's married to his wife, then the mother-in-law is usher, and one of them, therefore, is chayav. So, okay, what would be the din of the mother-in-law and her mother? Would her mother also be included? Rabbi Shmuel says, yes, but not from this pasuk. Rabbi Shmuel learns it out from another pasuk, as the Gemara discusses elsewhere. Whereas Rabbi Akiva says, no, this is the makar of a woman and her mother and her mother. Meaning, if he takes the mother-in-law's mother, we learn out from this pasuk that there's also a chiyuv. And that's why it says both of them, meaning both the mother and her mother. Okay, so this is just a remez. According to Rabbi Akiva, The Zav Abaye understands it, that there is an iser on a mother-in-law's mother. Okay, great. Is there any implications at all, legabe a heter of a woman, that his wife died, now he can marry a mother? Nah, nothing like that. But Rava says, oh man, you're missing the point. This is a brilliant pasuk. Rabbi Akiva is arguing about something very important. Rabbi Akiva is saying, if you have etem, if you have both women, your wife and the mother, then you get the chiyav of sreifa for sleeping with the mother. But just because a woman was once your mother-in-law, once that wife dies, then there's no chiyav on either of them. So the pasuk is basically putting them both together. When etem is present, then you can't marry the other one. But when etem is not present, then you can marry either. I mean, obviously she's dead, but it means you can marry even the mother. Okay, so then that means, according to Rabbi Akiva, the way Rava's understanding it, then there is an additional case where a woman becomes muteret after the death of a man's wife. Not only does her sister become muteret, but her mother becomes muteret, and yet we don't discuss that case. We only discuss the case here of the sister. If it were really going like Rabbi Akiva, and the reason this is so important to us is because all of the Mishnayos until now have been treating an Isser Lav as if it creates Mamzerim and so on. They were all going a little bit of Rabbi Akiva. So it's really pretty surprising to suddenly find that here we continue on as if nothing changed, and now we're not going like Rabbi Akiva. So I understand that if you hold according to Abaye, Rabbi Akiva never said anything about a mother-in-law becoming muteret after the death of a wife. But if you hold a Rava, that's the whole point, according to Rabbi Akiva, that if there's no etem, then there's no iser. And if the wife was dead, he could have married his mother-in-law. So why did we leave that out of the discussion? Don't you think that's fascinating? Says Rav Kahana, what are you talking about? Just because it says you don't get sreifa doesn't mean that it's mutter, for heaven's sakes. In the case of the sister, it says beferish, bechayeha. That's the whole din of litzror, is bechayeha. That was the comparison to yivam, for God's sake. What's it? So it says yisrafu? There's no din of yisrafu? All that's telling me is that there's no onesh of sreifa. That's all it's talking about. Never said a word that suddenly becomes mutter. It's still an Issacharis, it's still an Erva, it's just not Bisreifa. That's all that he said. So Nahida Miyatakra, Misreifa, Misra, Mika Miyatakra. What, you're allowed, according to Rabbi Akiva, to marry your mother-in-law? So there's no way that the Mishnah would have included this case. Afilu Alibin Rabbi Akiva, your whole discussion is based on an error. Okay, but now what does concern me is, why don't we aser a man who was a bad boy and married the sister of his wife? Why don't we aser him on his wife the same way we aser a woman who was a bad girl because she slept with this other guy, and we're saying that she can't go back to her husband? So why can he go back to his wife? What happened to parity? What happened to women's lib? What happened to fairness? For heaven's sakes, how come we only aser her, but boys are allowed to be as naughty as they want? This doesn't make sense, does it? So he should be usher to go back to his wife. Yeah, says the Gemara, but that's silly. Remember, the Rabbanan cannot make up dinim. They can only extend concepts that were provided by the Torah, and then they can make a mishmeret for that concept and so on, as long as they have a mechanism. But if the basic pattern isn't there, they can't just arbitrarily make up something. So therefore, in the case, lo dami, in the case of a wife, where if a wife had gone and committed adultery, miniraisa, she would have been usher, right? That's the holdin of the sota, over there, vihi nitma'a, and it was without any kind of nitfasa, vihilo nitfasa, she wasn't raped, which would have been the case. So therefore, bishogeg, the Rabbanan extended this in order to create the heter for the iguna. But they had a mechanism that they could base it on in the similarity, the halakha of the diraisa. How in the world could they do that for achot isha, where even bemezid, there's no basis in the Torah of asering a man on his wife because he once slept with her sister? So what could they use, even if they were trying to establish a parity, what could they use to establish it? B'shogeg lo gazru b'rabbanan, so the Rabbanan can't go along and make a gezerah. There's no basis for such a gezeira. I don't have something in the Torah that I can extend.